Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. So what were you thinking on Saturday with all that rain? Were you worried about where it was going and how much was being wasted? Or were you just trying to, you know, get out of the traffic alive? That's what we're talking about today is what do you do with excess rainwater? The stuff that doesn't naturally soak into your lawn, the stuff that's flying down through the downspout, down into the street and flowing into the nearest river or waterway. It's pretty much wasted when it does that. And it's also sweeping lots of undesirables along with it. Joining us today to talk, we're going to talk about two ways to take advantage of the rain today and to put it to better use than just greening your lawn before it washes down the street. Coming up later, we'll hear about the new Kosai water exhibit as well. It's very watery today. And we'll also get a crash course in rain gardens. Joining us now to talk about rain barrels is Ryan Paluski. He's Watershed Implementation Coordinator for the Lower Olentangy and Alum Creek Watershed at Franklin Soil and Water Conservation District, and he runs the rain barrel program. Welcome, Ryan.
Oh, thank you very much.
So rain barrels, what are they, and are they exactly what they seem to be?
Exactly what you would think they are. They are a container that holds back rainwater, and so you can store it for later use. And we use it as a educational tool to talk about stormwater and the issues that are out there. So,
well, what are the issues? What are the what is the problem with the runoff and these days?
It's both a quantity issue and a quality issue. First off, you know that impervious surfaces such as roads, rooftops, driveways, sidewalks. That rain washes right off of that real quickly into the street gutters, down that stormwater, storm sewer, and directly to the river. It picks up speed along the way. So with that, you got erosion issues in the streams it causes. And then second thing is a quality issue. Along the way, as it's running off, it's picking up pollutants, lawn fertilizers, dog waste, oil from cars off the streets, and it's shooting it right down through our rivers and streams, and lowering the quality of the water quality. So
if we can keep more of that water out for longer, then it filters through naturally into the water table.
Yes, if we can. First off, we're storing it, so we're slowing that water down, and then we're using it to infiltrate into the ground, use it on our plants, lawns. So it infiltrates that way, and it helps filter out the pollutants that way, yes.
If you have a question or comment about rain barrels, give us a call. My guest is Ryan Paluski. He's Watershed Implementation Coordinator for the Franklin Soil and Water Conservation District. You can give us a call. You can call 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page and post your question or comment there. We are trolling regularly. You have a question about rain barrels, now's the time. Why don't you tell us, Ryan, about the rain barrel program right at the outset, and then we can talk more about rain barrels.
Great. Yes, it's called the Green Spot Rain Barrel Program. This is made possible from our partners, City of Columbus, Department of Utilities, and Mayor Coleman helping us out there. Franklin County and the commissioners are also partnering along with that, and several of the satellite communities around here, Canal, Winchester, Gahanna, Hilliard, Upper Arlington, and Worthington are joining forces, and hopefully soon we'll get a couple other partners in the satellite communities to join forces with us. But the Rain Barrel Program is an educational piece. We're not in the business of selling rain barrels. We're utilizing that as an educational piece to talk about the stormwater. So there's two chances to get a rain barrel through this program. The first part is in-person workshops. We'll be holding about 20 workshops throughout the county. Most of these workshops are facilitated by local watershed groups such as FLO, Friends of Lower Olentangy River, and FACT, Friends of Alum Creek, and Tributaries. And so they'll be facilitating these workshops throughout the county. Starting this month, we're going to probably run until end of August workshops. And also there's an online portion that you can watch a short presentation. It talks about stormwater, the benefits of rain barrels, water conservation, and how to use that rain barrel. And then at the end of that short presentation, you take a a quiz. You have to pass a quiz, and then you're off to PayPal and can purchase a rain barrel that way. So, yeah, the barrel's a 45-gallon terracotta color. Pretty neat design, yeah.
Does it come with all of the gear that you need to hook it up?
Yes, it's all-inclusive. Like I said, it's a 45-gallon rain barrel, $50. It has a diverter kit system to it. So all you do is make one small incision hole into your gutter downspout, and the tool comes with the kit. And it's a diverter system. You pop this little plastic piece in there, and fills up your rain barrel. And once that rain barrel's full, it actually it doesn't overflow the rain barrel. It actually goes back into the system down the gutter again. So, yeah, all your pieces that you need are included in that kit. Yeah.
Do you recommend one at every downspout, or is even one a big improvement?
You know, you need plenty more space to hold the water. So one's not going to do it. It's not an end-all be-all for stormwater. It's just a way to educate yourself on how stormwater works. Say like the rains that we got this Saturday, actually I have a coworker that just set up a rain barrel. He said that rain barrel filled up within a matter of, you know, 10, 20 minutes. Hooking up multiple rain barrels is definitely a good thing. Cisterns, which are a larger type of rain barrel, 500 plus gallons, you can get those. You can store them underground and all that. Yeah, definitely need more though.
So, and when you're using them, does it have a spout or a tap on it? Or how do you use the water?
Definitely. Yes, there's a spout. There's also a kind of a plug at the bottom that you can hook a hose or the little garden hose that like a sprinkler system
like
out of
the
it.
The soaker kind
yeah,
of
soaker
thing?
Yeah, soaker hose. Uh-huh. Thank you. You can fill your watering can from the spout. It's easy. And we recommend that you elevate those rain barrels to get a little pressure behind the spout. So elevate at least 2 feet up in the air off some blocks or build a wooden platform for it.
Now, they're $50. For rain barrels, it usually costs about $119, but you're only giving one per family.
One per family, yes. We're not in the business of selling the rain barrels. There's plenty of vendors around Central Ohio that do sell rain barrels. I suggest you, if you're looking to build a system like that, to contact those vendors and look at the type of rain barrels they have. Yeah.
We're going to post your website on our website at WOSU.org/allsides, but I was wondering if people go to your website, can they get a list of the vendors? Can they find who else is who's selling them out there?
I believe we do have a list of vendors on that site, yes.
So they catch and control the storm waters. Is there any problem, anything that could be coming off your roof that you should be concerned about?
Everything from bird droppings to some people use a moss killer, get rid of the moss on your rooftop. That could be a concern in there. This is definitely not a drinkable water, but there's no real issues for uptake in plants, especially like vegetables and such. If you're worried about that, there's been no real concern about that.
Now, the grain barrel thing, it's gaining in popularity, and I'm starting to see them all around our neighborhood in Worthington, but are there some places that don't allow rain barrels because of their aesthetic properties?
There are, yeah. There's some ordinances out there. You have to screen it, put some bushes around it. It has to be a certain color. You can't put it out in front of your yard. It has to be in the back. So definitely keep an eye on what your local community is telling you through their ordinance system.
And how many do you expect to, I don't know how to phrase this, I don't want to say sell.
How many do we get?
How many do you want to get rid of this year?
This is the second year of this program. Last year it was just with City of Columbus, and we've expanded it pretty significantly this year. Last year we got out, I'd say close to 900. We reached, with the stormwater educational message, it was well over 1,000 people that we reached. So this year, you know, I'm not really setting a goal for number of rain barrels, but I think that's an amazing thought, though, that we got 800 out.
So. Could you run out of them, or do you just keep ordering them up as people participate?
We just
keep
going. Okay,
so you don't have to worry about getting in it. You just need to worry about getting into that workshop.
Yeah, we're going to be running, the program will run from April to August, so it should be plenty.
How big of a deal are rain barrels getting to be? Because even 5 or 6 years ago, it was hard to find a rain barrel.
Definitely. Yeah, there's all different types of designs out there now.
They're a lot prettier. They're not green. Lime green anymore.
Blue,
food, that's right, the blue.
Food grade barrels that...
that's right.
You can find from Pepsi. Those are still out there. Those are still an option. Yeah, they're a lot. I mean, the ones that we have in stock are kind of look like an urn in a way, and terracotta color, so it kind of looks like a pottery. And
is that pretty much the going color for what's approved by?
It's more aesthetically pleasing, yes.
Okay. And then there looks like there's a planter on the top of it.
Definitely. This year's design does have a planter. You can turn the lid upside down, and it fits in there real nicely. Has a little drainage plug at the bottom that you can keep the flowers out of the water. So,
Paul in Worthington, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I may have covered part of it here just in the last sentence. But are there zoning issues, and as it may relate to mosquitoes, you know, in other words, city fathers in most places don't want you to have a big buckets of, you know, water standing because mosquitoes will breed in it. And, you know, are there issues as to, you know, how you would set this thing up as it may relate to local zoning?
Definitely.
Well, let's talk about this mosquito issue because that's a good question. Thanks, Paul.
Yes, definitely mosquito issues are a concern out there. There's that issue of that mosquito getting into the rain barrel, laying its eggs. We suggest that, you know, before a rainfall, that you empty your rain barrel so you're getting fresh water.
So use it.
Yes, use that water before the next rainfall, within a week of that last rainfall. So, yeah, you want to control that cycle that they go through. So it's about a week cycle from egg to hatching to getting out.
But getting into the rain barrel isn't that easy for a mosquito.
Oh, they can ride the gutter down,
okay.
Lay their eggs up on top of your rooftop.
Alrighty then,
so
yeah.
So the issue, you want to make sure you clean out your gutters, get the leaves out, make sure that water's continuing to flow nice and easy. So.
And we did talk about ordinances. Just check with your local municipality.
Yes. What's nice about these rain barrels and the design behind them, some of these ordinances say that your gutter must be connected to the street gutter. It must go through that system. This one assures that it's not completely disconnected, that if you do have overflow, that it goes back through the storm sewer system. So,
well, even the best intended people have overflow no matter what they do. And when we return, we're going to talk about maybe how to deal with that in another kind of way with rain gardens. So stay with us. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
I'm Jennifer Ludden, and here's what we're working on in the week ahead on Talk of the Nation. Taste testing the Mars menu and 8-year-old pork chops. Political junkie Ken Rudin returns on Wednesday, plus the 10 most harmful novels. All that and much more. Join Neil Conan in the coming week on Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation this afternoon from 2 until 4 on 89.7 NPR News. 73 degrees in downtown Columbus, cloudy skies. There is a slight chance of rain today, otherwise some sunshine and a high of 75. Partly cloudy tonight and a low of 44 degrees.
Support for 89.7 comes from the McCoy Center. New York Fire Chief Richard Picciotto will tell his story of survival and escape from the September 11th collapse of the World Trade Center. Tuesday, April 24th at the McCoy Center in New Albany. McCoyCenter.org.
All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
April showers are often wasted as runoff. Joining us now to talk about how to tailor your garden to capture stormwater spilling from the roof and driveway is Stephanie Suter. She's habitat conservationist with the Franklin Soil and Water Conservation District. Welcome back to the show, Stephanie.
Thanks for having me.
Still with us is Ryan Paluski, Watershed Implementation Coordinator, fancy name for the guy who's running the rain barrel program for the Franklin Soil and Water Conservation District. Of course, he does a lot more than that. But if you have questions about rain barrels, Ryan's still going to be with us. There are about 230 rain gardens in Franklin County. Why has there been a big proliferation of these things recently, or have they always been among us? Stephanie?
Well, really, rain gardens are kind of using one of the oldest concepts that there is on the planet, using water to water plants. But it was kind of a trend that started out on the coasts and came Midwest. And we heard about multiple rain garden initiatives that were across the nation. And we thought that we should have one here in Columbus, Ohio. Our district deals a lot with water quality, so it seemed like a right fit. And in 2006, we set up the first demonstration rain garden in the county at the Division of Wildlife on Dublin Road. And at that time, there were only three rain gardens in the county. So we ended up creating the Central Ohio Rain Garden Initiative and partnered with a lot of different agencies and organizations to start getting the message out, you know, hey, this might be a great practice for stormwater management. And it's really just mushroomed from there.
What's the difference between a rain garden and a regular garden?
Well, a rain garden is a garden that you create in the landscape that is designed to catch stormwater coming off of your roof or parking lot or any other type of impervious surface. It's actually a depression. Most rain gardens are usually 4 to 8 inches deep, and so the water comes into the rain garden and it fills up. It might pond, and then it drains through. They're sized so that the rain garden will drain within 24 hours. And they have to be planted with plants that are going to be both water and drought tolerant, so they can take that extra rain, but they can also make it through, you know, a couple weeks if we don't have rain.
So how many plants out there are both rain and drought tolerant?
There are quite a few.
If you go native, right?
Yeah. I mean, there are thousands of native plants native to Ohio. We have several planting lists that we put out to people that show the different types that would be appropriate based on your preference of when it would bloom or what it looks like or the height. So there are a lot of different choices.
Now, the rain gardens I've seen have different, like, big rocks, different kinds of material in them. It's not just dirt and plants.
Sometimes people do add stone for aesthetics, but I think it's a good idea, and a lot of people use this method where the water enters the garden, let's say from your downspout, adding some fist-sized cobblestones to that area to help slow that water as it enters so you don't get any gullies or erosion, things like that. So some people do use different types of media within the rain garden that's either functional or just for aesthetics.
I'm trying to visualize where you might put it around your house. So would it be actually necessarily where your downspout is? Or
it would be, although you want to stay 10 to 20 feet away from the foundation of your house.
Right.
Because you're going to be storing water underground. So before it's infiltrating, you don't want it leading back towards your house. If you have a sump pump that normally runs, you want it to be then probably 20 or 30 feet away so you don't have your sump pump continually cycling that and maybe burn out. So staying, you know, somewhat relatively close to your downspout, to the source of the water that you're getting, but far enough away from the house. You don't also always need to call the Ohio Utilities Protection Service, you know, call before you dig to check for any underground utilities. And a lot of times those underground utilities help determine where you're going to put it. So you probably not going to put it where you have a gas line running through your yard. Things like that.
Juanita in Westchester, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Juanita. You have a question for Ryan Paluski?
Yes.
Okay.
I was just wondering, hon, if you could take bleach and put it in the rain barrel. Because when I was little, we had a cistern. We didn't have running water. I mean, you know, stuff like that. We had a pump, and we carried it into the house. But we always would put a cup of Clorox bleach in it. To kill the mosquito larvae and stuff. Could that work in the rain barrel?
I would imagine it would work, but I would advise against it. I don't.
Well, I mean, you wouldn't put a cup in there, but you probably put maybe a fourth of a cup or something. I don't know.
There are some more natural ways to do that to control the mosquitoes. I mean, one is to empty your rain barrels constantly to control that cycle. Two, the mosquito dunks are available at hardware stores.
What are those?
I believe they're kind of a bacteria that attacks the larva.
Okay.
And it's safe for plants and vegetables. If you're going to use your rain, you don't want to. I don't think you would want to put a bleach in there to just so you don't kill off your grass or your plants. You don't know what that combination that ratio of bleached water is. So.
Right.
I did.
Go ahead, Juanita.
I said I didn't know. That's why I asked. I know that we used to do it when I was little, so I just wondered if it would hurt. You know.
All right. Well, thanks for the call, Juanita.
Okay.
Take care.
Bye
bye. Email from Thomas in Westerville. He writes, I currently save water in a rain barrel and use it for gardening. I am considering putting a barrel in my attic and storing water for the shower. I would use it during warm weather only and not use any electricity to pump it. Any experience with this? Ryan Paluski?
Personally, no. I've heard people use it to flush their toilets. They get a system going where they can use it there to get the water flushed out. As for showers, no, I don't. I'm not sure if we would be concerned if we'd have to filter it out or what. But
right,
that's unique.
All right, Thomas. Good luck. Let us know how it goes. We're talking about rain barrels and rain gardens. If you have a question or comment for our guests, Ryan Paluski and Stephanie Suter from the Franklin Soil and Water Conservation District, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Do you have a rain barrel or a rain garden? Give us a call and tell us what your experience is. You can also go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page and post your question or comment there. We've been having really strange weather. We're always talking about the weather in Ohio. It's bad enough that we're always talking about it. Now we're kind of oohing and aahing over it. It's very strange. Does this have any impact on rain gardens?
Well, it does. They're going to be receiving more rain when we have more rain. For example, last year in April, we had over 7 inches of rain. The year in total, we had 40% more rain than any year on record. You kind of think about when you're going to design your rain garden about the overflow aspect. If we do get, more rain than expected, where will the overflow of it go? And most people, if you have downspouts that go underneath your yard and just spill out into the street, you can keep part of that downspout in place. So if it does overflow, you still have that part connected to the street and it can overflow back into the street. At my house, I just have turf grass around all of it, so my rain garden would just overflow into the grass if needed. But most of the time, they're draining so quickly. We put in a project in Westerville with 16 residential rain gardens and 5 rain gardens in the right-of-ways. And last year, they didn't have overflow problems at all. They were able to take the majority of that rain. So the bigger the plants get over time, the root systems start to get bigger and they actually increase in the infiltration rate with time. But considering that overflow from the get-go is always a good idea.
You know, I have this low point in my yard. It's not 15 feet from or as many feet away from the house as you suggested, but I have started to plant some native plants there, some stuff that I saw along the river one time.
Mm-hmm.
And they do pretty well there. But it's not what I would necessarily think of as a rain garden because it's not a depression. It's just where the water sets, whether I like it or not. I mean, I don't have to dig a hole. It's sitting there.
Yeah, and we get calls at our office all the time. A lot of people have a similar situation. You just have a little low spot. A lot of people have poorly drained soils on their property, so they might have standing water for a couple days at a time. And you can definitely plant the same types of plants that you would put in a rain garden. You just, if you have a problem area like that, you wouldn't want to direct any more storm water
to
it.
Yeah.
Just so you don't, because you want it to drain within that 24 hours. And if it doesn't already, then it's probably not going to with more water.
So give us an example of some of the kinds of plants. Tell us about some of the plants that work really well in Ohio.
I think one of my favorites, at least right now, is a plant called Blue Flag Iris. It's an early spring bloomer, gorgeous, iris-colored flower, and it holds its foliage throughout the entire season. It gets about maybe 2 feet tall. There are a lot of plants that you can plant on the outsides, on the outskirts, that are probably going to get less water, so they can be a little bit more on the drier side, like butterfly weed or purple coneflower, even wild quinine, something like that, because they're in the smaller rains, they're not going to get that extra push of water. Kind of in the center of the rain garden, you can put plants that are a little bit more versatile either way, maybe something like false sunflower or golden alexanders, some types of asters, even penstemons, something like that. It kind of depends on what your height preference is, if it's going to be in the front yard type.
And do they go down into the depression?
Yes. So okay. the final grade of the rain garden, if yours is going to be 8 inches deep, will be 8 inches. That's after mulching and the plants have been planted.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. I'm talking with Stephanie Suter of the Franklin Soil and Water Conservation District about rain gardens. We've also been talking about rain barrels. If you have a question about either, give us a call, 614-292-8513. Email from Phil. If you want to email us, you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. He writes, I use rainwater in the laundering of my clothes in addition to using it on my gardens. I use rainwater during the wash cycle and city water during the rinse cycle. Rainwater is extremely soft and requires less detergent to get your clothes clean. This not only reduces the amount of detergent going down the drain, but also saves money. It also helps to empty your rain barrel, reducing the chance for mosquitoes to breed in it. I have a 55-gallon rain barrel and a 270-gallon tote. The barrel fills quickly, so I use it for laundry and the tote for watering plants. What's a tote, Ryan?
Phil,
email us. Tell us what a tote is. It's not really clear to us what a tote is. Okay, so how would you use rainwater in the laundering of your clothes? You mean, how does that?
Some people set up gray water systems. So they have a little contraption that basically will pump that through. And some people, you know, my grandmother, she actually, you could pour water into her washing machine. I mean, there are like older versions where you could do something similar to that. It's likely that he probably has some type of pump system set up.
Okay. Yeah. Wow. And really, I want to know what a tote is. So Phil, email us again and tell us what a tote is. Ahmed in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. Hi, Ahmed.
Yeah, hello, and good morning. How are you?
Good, thank you.
I have a quick question for your guest. Regarding the mosquito larvae, that the bacteria that eat the mosquito larvae, can we know how efficient that bacteria is in eating the mosquito larvae, and where can we get it, and what is the name of the product, please?
Mosquito dunks, I know a lot of local hardware stores do sell them. They're a bacteria that'll attack the.
So you just
larva.
Go into your hardware store and say, "I need a mosquito dunk."
Yes,
D-U-N-K.
I believe that's
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, it's real technical here, Ahmed.
And you can just break the pieces of that dunk off, and just a little at a time, throw it in your rain barrel, and it should control the larva.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Did you try it before?
I have not personally tried it, no, but a lot of people have called and tell us it does work quite well.
All right, great. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you, Ahmed.
Bye.
Does anybody ever, Stephanie, put in fountains and things like that so that they can have more water?
In their rain garden?
Yes.
It's actually, rain gardens are not actually a water feature.
Right.
I mean, they are when it's raining, but other than that, you really don't want standing water. I suppose you could have some type of, you know, maybe you have a pond that it kind of overflows into a rain garden and maybe that has a water feature. But the rain garden itself, if you were just doing a rain garden, it's unlikely it would have
it's
that
feature.
It's not
the same thing as a water pond kind
right,
of thing.
Right. It's not a wetland. It's not a pond. It should drain within that 24 hours. And there, we have information on the Central Ohio Rain Garden Initiative website on how you go about sizing that to make sure. The site assessment kind of goes through all of the steps on how somebody could do that just to make sure you get that size to drain quickly.
Do you use a rain garden when you need to use a rain garden, or could you create a rain garden in your yard, just create it, and where there isn't overflow, where there isn't a drainage problem? Or do you want to shoot for the place where there's a drainage problem?
Either way.
Okay.
Some sites, if you have a drainage problem, it might not be able... A rain garden might not be an appropriate fit. And that's if you have really poorly drained soils, If you have that standing water for several days at a time, there might be other factors of the site that just don't allow you to be able to do that. But most people just, you know, do them for the sake of doing them to, you know, to improve that water quality feature. Once the water filters through the rain garden, a lot of the plants are actually able to take up even heavy metals. So if you planted one off of a parking lot or your driveway, or if it's collecting road drainage, a lot of those plants can actually break it down as well as the microorganisms. So getting that water in there and filtering it as it becomes groundwater and makes its way naturally to the creeks and streams, that water will also be filtered.
Jerome in Marysville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Jerome.
Hi, Ann. Hi, yes. I just thought it'd be interesting to point out that in Japan, the washing machines are in the same room where the baths are, and they typically have a hose that connects to the bath, and they use the bath water as for the wash cycle. And the funny thing is, they have so much water, they have so much rain, and they work so hard to save it. And I also thought I'd mention that Australians, my friends in Australia, they work really hard at replumbing their houses to use gray water. And finally, I live in a, you know, in town. We're not living in the farm, but we live in Marysville. And we planted a large part of our backyard with native prairie grasses. Don't have to mow it. And, you know, that helps control the water, too. So anyway, I just thought I'd add those things.
All right. Well, thank you, Jerome.
You bet.
Gray water. He called them gray water. Is that the technical term for used water?
Yeah.
Okay.
Pretty much. Yeah.
So you want to find the right place. You want to make sure it's spaced. You said you have some instructions on your website that can help people decide how big of a area to create the depression in.
Yep, there are sizing instructions on there, and those are based off of what types of soil you have and the amount of drainage area that leads to the rain garden.
And what kind of plants to put in it, what kind of plants can go around it.
Yep, we've got example plants on there. We also have a feature called public gardens and residential gardens that shows pictures of rain gardens all across the county. So people can kind of start to get an idea of what a rain garden might look like in their yard, all different types. You can have a rain garden look wild and wonderful that's completely filled in with plants, or you can have it a little more well-manicured looking, maybe space the plants a little further apart. So the website goes through a lot of those different considerations for you.
Okay, well, when we return, we're going to be joined by Josh Kessler. He's project manager at the COSAI Water Exhibit, and he's going to tell us about the water garden as well at COSAI. So Rain Garden at COSAI. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
More than 10 states have introduced bills or passed laws intended to ban Sharia law. Advocates of such bans describe Sharia as a threat to our freedom. But what is Sharia law? On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Sadaqat Qadri, who has written a new history of Sharia law. Qadri is a barrister in England who focuses on human rights issues. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins later today at noon on 89.7 NPR News. Stay with us in 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, hour two of the program, Bullying, the Impact on Victims and Strategies for Prevention, a discussion of bullying from 11 till noon on 89.7 NPR News.
Support for 89.7 comes from John Glenn School of Public Affairs, offering graduate degree programs designed for the working professional. More information online at glenn.osu.edu or at an information session on April 17th or 18th.
WOSU Public Media and The Refectory present Chefs in the City's VIP Dinner with world-renowned chef Hubert Keller. It's on May 2nd. Dine with Chef Keller and enjoy a five-course dinner. A limited number of tickets are on sale now at WOSU.org/chefs or call 614-292-4337.
Partly cloudy skies for today. We'll see some sunshine, but there's also a chance of some rain before 2 p.m. this afternoon, a high of 75. Clouds tonight, a low of 44. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
We are talking about water today, specifically rainwater and how you can use rain barrels and rain gardens and, in general, water. Josh Kessler from COSI, he's a project manager at COSI, put together the COSI Water Exhibit, is with us now to join the show. Welcome to the show, Josh.
Thank you very much.
And first, let's talk about the rain garden at COSI, because that's the first one I ever saw was at COSI.
Absolutely. So, and Stephanie was a huge help in getting that rain garden set up at COSI. So we installed that a couple of years ago, and it, of course, diverts some of the water off of our roof. We have a very, very large roof at COSI. So it's not water from the entire roof, but it's from about 1,500 square feet of the roof. And that goes down to about a 300 square foot rain garden that we installed. And it's great. It's, you know, it's a good chance for us to educate the public on what rain gardens are and how you can use them, and also to, you know, sort of practice what we preach as well.
You know, that rain garden is located on the west side of the building. Stephanie, does it make any difference where, in terms of where a rain garden is located? In other words, if it's located in a lot of intense shade, it may not drain as fast, or it may not evaporate as quickly?
Well, rain gardens can be in the sun or shade.
Okay.
I mean, it just depends on the conditions on the property. You don't want to build it underneath a large tree.
Okay.
But if you're getting building shade, you know, that's completely fine. I think the reason we located on that side was because there was a smaller section of the roof that we could get to. All of their downspouts are internal.
Oh.
So we actually had to tap into the side of the building and create a scupper to come out into a splash garden that goes into a dry stream bed, which then goes into the rain garden.
And they do use cobblestones, if I...
Yeah, and there's some larger pieces of stone in the splash garden as well. Amy Dutt with Urban Wild was the one that came up with the design for that, and the team with us and Columbus and COSI all worked together on the design.
Now, you call it a splash garden?
Yeah, it's really neat. Where the water comes out, there's it comes out a couple feet above where the dry stream bed is.
Okay.
And so there are these large rocks. So if you were out there during the rain, you would see the water literally, you know, splashing down into it. It's a pretty neat design.
Yeah.
And again, it keeps it from the erosion.
Right.
It keeps things at bay like that.
Yeah, it's really something to see when the water's really coming down.
You know, I guess you'd have to work there to plan that properly. But Michael in Worthington, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. You have a question for Ryan Paluski.
Yeah, thanks, Ann. You know what? I missed the first 10 minutes, and I think that's when you talked about the rain barrels that might
that's
help
okay.
me. I have a really steep roof, and I have 3-inch pipes going out to the street. And in one corner of my house, because it's so steep, if there's like a flash flood kind of an event, the downspout just can't take it all. The problem is that the previous owners landscaped right around that corner in cement and stone. But I do have either an area where I could put the barrel, but I can't figure out how exactly I would. Can you describe how either a rain garden or a barrel would work off of the corner of a house when there's cement and stone as part of the landscape right around it?
Yes, with a rain barrel, you want to make sure that it has a flat surface to sit on, and I'm not sure your exact situation. So it doesn't really matter what's underneath it. It could be, you know, a hard surface. It could be on your patio.
I thought it sat down in the ground.
No. This is above ground, and actually you want to elevate these above the ground as well, just to get that pressure when you're trying to empty out your rain barrels.
How does it get fed? Can you walk near it? Like, I would think the downspout would be... Go ahead, describe it.
No, it's directly connected to your downspout.
At ground level?
Yep, right at ground level, so you can access it very easily.
But then if you have a walkway around your house of stone and cement, there would be that spout sitting, the angle of the spout sitting on top of your... You'd have to step over it, in other words.
Yeah. It's situational, yeah.
Are there ever downspouts that have, like, an extra feed that one goes down into the drain, but one maybe 6 inches above the second feed that would go to the barrel?
With these rain barrel and the design that they have, it's a diverter system, so you know, whatever's going into your rain barrel, it fills up your rain barrel first. All the excess, once you fill that rain barrel, goes back down through the system. So I think you were describing how your downspout goes directly out through your yard. So that water would fill up your rain barrel first and then send it back through the system, which actually you could pair that off with a rain garden, actually. Something we like to call a treatment train. So you're controlling quantity, and then you're helping to control the quality of the water through a rain garden. So,
but if the barrel is sitting about 3.5 feet up, like chest level, 4 feet, is that where it meets the downspout? So I have to have a side angle downspout that kind of sticks out from the house at about 4 feet high, or?
No. No, I think you can maneuver these rain barrels around the corner. They're very flexible, like the tubing that goes with it. So, you know, and it's hard to visualize your situation.
Yeah,
we're
posting their website on our website at WOSU.org/allsides, and also they do have those workshops, Michael. I don't know if you heard at the beginning, there are, I think, about 20 workshops scheduled, and if you attend one of them, you can, and they'll answer, you know, and be more specific. You can buy a rain barrel for $50 from the Franklin Soil and Water Conservation District.
Sounds right up. Two weeks in a row, timely shows. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Take care, Michael. Phil wrote back. He says, totes are large cube-shaped plastic containers used in the food industry for shipping liquid ingredients like honey or molasses. I feel like I've learned so many words today. They have a spout built into them, and some companies don't reuse them and will give them away. He said, when I had new gutters installed in my house, I asked the contractor to add a downspout to my tote. He installed it with a shutoff valve so I could divert excess water to the regular downspout that leads to the street. Sometimes in the spring, the tote can be completely filled if we have several days of rain. As for the laundry, I empty the rainwater into 3-gallon buckets and carry them to the basement. Each bucket of water weighs 24 pounds, so carrying the water and going up and down the basement stairs is a good exercise program. It takes 15 gallons for one load of clothing. My heaven.
Excellent.
From Eddie on Facebook, he says, sorry if I missed this. What are the placement guidelines for water gardens near septic systems?
Oh, yes. You want to be a little further away from your septic system. Definitely. Okay. We've got...
Good question.
Yeah, on that same website, we've got some... the different limitations of how far away you should be from septic, leach fields, your house, things like that. So that information should be there.
Now, Josh Kessler, on to COSI and the water exhibit. It's not just, this is a big exhibit.
It's a very
Tell
big
us
exhibit.
About it.
It's a 10,000 square foot exhibit. It's here at COSI. It's a traveling exhibit. So it opened March 17th and we have it through September 3rd. And it's all about water. So it talks about the properties of water. It talks about places where there's a scarcity of water. It talks about places where there's an overabundance of water. Obviously, water is something that's important to everything on this planet. So so it goes into a lot of that. We also talk some about conservation of water, water pollution, and it's a gorgeous exhibit. There's a lot of really nice environmental elements, some really great hands-on interactives. The exhibit itself was developed by the American Museum of Natural History in conjunction with the Science Museum of Minnesota and several other museums across the globe. They felt like it was a really important topic to put together a museum exhibit about, and we felt the same way, so we brought it in.
At the beginning of the exhibit, there's a display that shows a container of water releasing single drops of water,
yes,
one at a time. What's the message there?
The message in that exhibit is that there is a lot of power in that single drop of water. So you walk into the exhibit and there's a fog curtain that you walk through that has the names of water in many different languages presented on it. And then you encounter that. And it really is designed to make you think about just what that one drop of water means. You know, it's a single drop of water, but as you find out later in the exhibit, this has the power to move mountains and create canyons and create life and, you know,
The basics.
Absolutely.
It's pretty extensive, as you mentioned, and getting to the other topic of the program today, there's a waterworks segment that features a cistern, which is a really big water rain barrel.
Very large rain barrel.
From Thailand. It's a reproduction of an actual cistern.
Yes, it is. So, so part of the exhibit talks about how there are places in the world where, you know, we are living in a part of the world where we're very fortunate in that we turn on the spigot and water comes out. So, but there are lots of places in the world where that's not the case. So, so it talks about how people cope with not having enough water. You know, in some places, rain barrels are, you know, de rigueur. You know, that's it's what you do in order to collect water. You don't have a water system. There are also other innovations and that are spoken of. So, for example, there are places where people have to haul their water to get it back to their village. So the invention of a barrel with a hole in it that you can put a rope through so that you can pull it back to the village means that you can haul a lot more water back to the village.
It's shaped like a wheel. It was really interesting.
Yeah, it's I think it was around 30 gallons. The increase over the amount of water that, because I think that up to then the villagers were carrying water in 5 to 8 gallon buckets back to the village. So to be able to increase that, you know, by 5 or 6 fold was a huge innovation.
What about for little children?
For little children, there's a lot in the exhibit. There's right at the beginning, there's 3 states of water. So there's a big cube of ice that you can interact with, and then a stream of liquid water, and then some water vapor. Later on in the exhibit, there's a large reproduction of a polar bear that you can interact with, and there's a neat little story block interactive there where basically you're trying to tell a story in the correct steps, and if you put it in order in the correct steps, then it pops up and plays a video for you. And then at the end, our local connection, we worked with a couple of local photographers, George Anderson and Mark Romisher, and we have a video of a canoe taking a trip down the Olentangy River.
It's as if you're sitting in the canoe.
Yes.
And going down the Olentangy.
Yes, and we have 2 canoes that you can sit in and watch, and we have some life jackets to wear from the Division of Watercraft at the Ohio Department of Natural Resources, and that's been really popular with little ones.
The kids love it, and finally Mom and Dad can sit down. My favorite, I guess, I didn't get to look at it really, really closely, but I love the big globe hanging from the ceiling, and there's 4 different projectors that are projecting the Earth. Tell us about what that's supposed to convey.
That is Science on a Sphere, and that's actually from NOAA. NOAA produces those, and what they do is it's a, exactly as you described, it's a large globe, but there are projectors that are playing on it. So as opposed to a static globe, you're seeing actual images from NOAA satellites. So it's actual data, and there are 2 or 3 different videos that play on it. It talks about weather currents. It talks about ocean temperatures, and is just really striking. It's a really interesting way to look at the Earth and to see that. You know, most of the time when you see that information projected, it's on a flat screen. You know, to see it projected in 3 dimensions on an actual globe is really pretty powerful.
My guest is Josh Kessler. He's project manager at COSI. We're talking about the new water exhibit there. It's going to be there
through September 3rd, through Labor Day.
Through Labor Day, if you're interested in that. Also with us, Stephanie Suter, habitat conservationist at the Franklin Soil and Water Conservation District, and her colleague Ryan Paluski. We're talking about rain barrels and rain gardens. We do have a few more minutes. If you have a question or comment, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wsu.org, although I'd stick to the phone calls if you want to get through right away. Now, there is part of the exhibit is about what happens when you dam water or you undam water.
Mm-hmm.
And tell us what you're working on with the city. You told us that you were planning some event with the city regarding the dams on
right.
the Scioto.
Right. Having the with the announcement just recently made about that dam being removed there just south of us, what we're going to be doing is we're going to be able to have the opportunity to show off some of the renderings from MSI and KKG that sort of show what that's going to look like when that comes out, and goes into a little bit of history of why that dam was put in originally and why the city is now recommending that it's taken out. So it's a nice little connection to the fact that, you know, we have a big river that runs right alongside us. So it's a nice little connection to that.
Yeah, is this a good thing? Is Franklin Soil and Water Conservation District happy about the undamming of the river?
Oh, definitely. Stephanie? I think we're supportive of most of those projects. And I think the plan calls for making it more of a natural channel running through. I mean,
you know, a
large,
what a concept.
Large river with concrete walls as the side is definitely not something we're interested in.
So. Open floodplain park, that's going to be great. Greening of the center of our city. It's an amazing thought.
Well, and the amount of acreage that they've talked about that's possible to recover just through doing that is amazing.
Yeah.
And you couple with that with the removal of the Fifth Avenue Dam as well later this year, it's going to open up a lot of green space.
I'm going to put Robert on now because we're running out of time. Robert, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hi.
I got about a 700,000-gallon water-catching system at home. We use it to water our about acre garden. We live out in the country, so we got to make sure that we put those mosquito pellets in the system. They do work very well, and there's always stuff come up with to reuse this rainwater. You know, we actually use it to heat our greenhouses on cold days. We set up a system of black tubing that the water flows through, and sunlight just warms up the water to quite a large temperature.
All right. Well, thanks for the call, Robert.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Ryan Paluski, Watershed Implementation Coordinator for the Franklin Soil and Water Conservation District. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Ann.
Appreciate it. Stephanie Suter, again, with Habitat Conservationists, also at Franklin Soil and Water Conservation District. Stephanie, thanks for joining us again.
Thank you so much.
And Josh Kessler, thanks for coming in and telling us about the COSI Water Exhibit.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.